We have some great programs lined up for you during the Christmas season, and here's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen. It's a special church bulletin insert for Issues Etc. Christmas programming. Just go to the support page at issuesetc.org, download, print, and make copies of the Christmas programming bulletin insert. The bulletin insert can be used for the weekends of December 18th and 25th. Talk radio for the Christmas season. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org and click support.
I'm a man of blood, Katie. I divide people. Thousands have died because of me. Most days I'm so depressed I can't even get out of bed. People try to make me a fixed star. But I'm not. I'm a wandering planet. No one should look to me for guidance.
Two things I promise you. We will make joyous music together. And to get to you, your enemies will have to step across my dead body.
A little dialogue between Martin and Katie Luther prior to their marriage from the Luther movie of several years back. The church remembers on this day Katie Luther, wife of 16th century reformer Martin Luther. He was reluctant, but after they did marry, he didn't know what to do without her. One wonders how he might have prospered as a reformer if he had not had, in his words, Katie, to keep house for him. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It's Monday, December the 20th. We are coming to you live. Dr. Martin Nolan joins us for the first few minutes of this hour to talk about Katie Luther. A little bit later, we'll pick up our Apparent Contradictions in the Bible series. We'll talk about when Jesus' ministry actually began. Does the Gospel of John deny the temptation of Jesus? It doesn't seem to include much or anything about it. And then Jesus' entry into Jerusalem. The various accounts are a little confusing. We'll see if we can clear up some of those apparent contradictions in the Bible with Professor David Lewis of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. As I said, we're coming to you live this Monday afternoon, the 20th of December. You can join us with questions or comments, 1-877-623-6943. That's our call-in number, 877-623-MYIE. You can send us an email right here in the studio. We get it in real time. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Or send us a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. Martin Noland is a regular guest. He's pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana, and past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, welcome back.
Good evening.
How unheard of would it have been there in the 16th century for a former monk to marry a former nun, as did Martin Luther and Katie Luther?
Well, I think there were a few dispensations on a very rare occasion, and that was allowed by the Pope. And probably this would only happen in cases where a certain line of nobility had passed away to a war or plague. And the person that was in the monastery is the only person to continue that dynastic line, and it was to the Pope's advantage. So this just didn't happen. And then so to do this willfully, without the sanction of the church, and that by that meaning the Pope or the bishops, this would be high treason against the Most High God, and they would say it's blasphemy. This would just be there are all sorts of things that people would say about it. It would be as if they were servants of the devil, that they were undercutting the very root and basis of society. They would see them as servants of the devil, as if they were warlocks and witches. It would just blow people's minds. And you can see this probably more than anything else besides the destruction of images, which the Lutherans were not involved in. But outside of that, nothing was more iconoclastic in the view of the Roman Catholic people than the marriage of former monks and nuns. That was just, it was impossible. I mean, this was something would start wars, and it did.
This wasn't done, however, by Luther and his colleagues, and ultimately Luther, when he marries Katie, this wasn't done just to make a stink, or even to make a stink. They actually believed something about marriage that eventually compelled even the reluctant Luther to engage in it.
Well, and that's true about the case of Luther, certainly, that his decision to get married to Katharina was not intended to be a political statement. In her case, he had helped her and about 12 other nuns to escape from a nunnery. And then because he helped them escape, he was responsible for their livelihood. And he arranged marriages for all of them, but nobody would take Katharina. And when Nicholas Amsdorf, who was a mutual friend of theirs, finally went up to Katharina and said, well, who would you marry? And they wanted to put her up with this old professor, Glatz, but he was very opinionated and hard to get along. She said, oh, not him. She said, I'll only get married to you, Nicholas, or to Martin. And that was it. So she was a little bit headstrong. And maybe Luther liked that. I don't know, because he had his own stubbornness streak, too. But it wasn't he made it clear that it wasn't out of he didn't have the problem of not being able to resist the temptation to sin against the sixth commandment. That wasn't the issue for him. It was that this woman was here, and he was responsible for her. She'd indicated that she was willing to get married to him. And, I mean, frankly, there was a lot of things that would have been better in his life. He could look around at friends that were married if he had a wife. And I think he began to realize that what he'd been teaching people, he could actually put into practice himself. And the lady was there, and so they went for it.
She is, before her marriage to Luther, Katharina von Bora. And give us a bit of her history and story.
Well, she was born to what we call lesser nobility. These would be knights or nobles with some land. That would be the von Bora family. Probably it says about three brothers and a sister. Her mother died when she was five, and so her father remarried, and as often happened, then he sent her away to a convent. And later, when she came out of the convent, Luther and others tried to get her back with her family, but he refused. Probably her stepmother refused to have her back. So she came from a step family, and she started in the Cistercian convent at Nimshin, and then was moved to another place. She took her vows at the age of 16. She learned to read and write and some Latin. She was a very good worker, a very good employee, very diligent about her tasks and pious. And so in many ways would be today a model pastor's wife, and she was well suited for the work that she had to do with Martin Luther.
There's a story, and I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, but on their wedding night, Luther took a friend in. I mean, something that most grooms would not think of doing after a wedding ceremony, but is this a true story?
Oh, well, that was common practice in those days. It was to confirm the consummation, and we, of course, would think this would be highly irregular, but that was a common practice, at least in Germany in those days. So just to make sure that the marriage was consummated, and therefore it was after that it could not be broken.
Interesting. Now, let's talk about her life with Luther and their life together. When I visited Germany several years ago, they really like Katie Luther. They say when you go to the Luther house, they say a lot about Katie. She's the main presence there. Luther's kind of a footnote.
Well, I think some of that is more recent political statements. You know, to be with it, historians have to kind of follow the whatever the current thing is in society, and to. You know, a lot of people just don't have an interest in history anyway. So if you bring in a figure or an event that modern people can relate to, then that draws them into the history. That, anyway, is the thinking behind it. So I know that the Luther Halle and some of the others have made a real big deal about Katharina, and rightly so. I mean, she's an interesting person in her own, but the thing is, Luther Halle really, significant person there is Martin Luther himself. So you could say, well, that may be a passing fancy. But she really did have a lot of contribution, and I think specifically I would say that Luther would not have lived past the attacks that he had, kidney stones and heart attacks about the time of the small called articles. He wouldn't have lived past that without her nursing care and continued care for him personally. And he accomplished a lot of things and wrote a lot of works after that period. So we would be much poorer in terms of our knowledge of a Lutheran understanding of the Bible and of doctrine if she hadn't been around. She really contributed to that.
We got about a minute before our break, and I got a couple questions on the other side of the break for you, Marty. But how many kids did Katie and Luther have?
They had, they had six children total. Two of them died, one at 6 months and the other at 13 years, and four of them lived to adulthood. So that would be Johannes or Hans, Martin, Paul, and Margaret.
And I take it that, as was probably typical in those days, her job was to essentially run the household, about 30 seconds?
Yeah, that would be the Luther house today, which had been the Augustinian monastery, was ceded over by John Frederick over to them, and it became their house, and they kind of ran it as an inn for students or for visiting dignitaries, and that's where we get all the temple the table talks from, was from the dinners that she served there to Luther and the guests.
It's Monday afternoon, the 20th of December. What kind of questions or comments do you have about Katie Luther White, wife of 16th century Martin Luther the Reformer? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Our guest talking about Katie Luther, Dr. Martin Noland, pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana, past director of the Concordia Historical Institute.
We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Christmas and one for Epiphany, and we'll send you this new CD for any size year-end donation. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size gift before the end of the year, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Christmas and Epiphany sermons.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
At SteadfastLutherans.org, we've been called contentious. We've even been called the brothers of John the curmudgeon, and we may well be curmudgeonly sometimes. But we always have the best and clearest voices in confessional Lutheranism. Articles from Molly Hemingway, Martin Noland, Clement Preuss, Todd Wilkin, and a host of regular contributors. Come check out the new Lutheran media. Always clear, always concise, always confessionally Lutheran. SteadfastLutherans.org.
The latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal is out. It contains an article that I've written titled The Theology of Jesus. What's the connection between the Church's Confession of Christ and her Confession of the Trinity? Find out with the latest Issues Etc. journal. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Mason Beecroft writes about the false promises of Pop American Christianity. Get your copy of the latest Issues Etc. journal by sending your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. On Wednesday this week, we're going to announce the winner of the entire Christmas library of Arch Books for Children. We're going to give away 18 books. That's the entire Christmas library of Arch Books for Children. Now, you can qualify, become a new member of the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, or upgrade your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org. If you click the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses, you'll find out about how to become a new member or upgrade your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. You can call Craig at 618-223-8382. That's probably the quickest way to do it, 618-223-8382, or send Craig an email at craig@issuesetc.org, craig@issuesetc.org. Then Wednesday we'll announce the winner of the entire 18-book Christmas Library of Arch Books for Children. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. We're talking about Katie Luther, wife of 16th-century reformer Martin Luther. She ran the house in such a way that kind of kept them from falling prey to Luther's, what shall we say, inability to handle his money. Is that true?
Oh, well, that would give the wrong impression if you just put it that way. he was overly generous when there came to be a need that he became aware of among students or guests or even just people in the town. He would give away the wedding gifts that were given to them. You know, well, I mean, I don't know if he didn't know the value of these things, either economically or how much they meant to Catherine. But when, I mean, she got wind of this after some of this, their wedding gifts started disappearing. And she first thought that the servants were stealing them and then found out that he was giving them away. And then, well, I'm sure he got it. You know, he got a real talking to, and then his response was, well, these are people that have real needs, and we're taking care of Catherine, and so you know, this can help take care of these people, and she just didn't know how to reason with him. He would often dip into the family treasury to help out the poor or students that were in need, and finally she just had to put a stop to it. And I don't know exactly the details on that, but it was a generosity that he was used to living as an Augustinian monk, because the Augustinian monks were beggar monks and they lived with nothing. I mean, except for their prayer books and a Bible, maybe, or something like a Bible. So he's not used to having nice clothes or things around the house, and she came from a lesser nobility, so she'd be kind of like upper middle class. So there was a little bit of a economic disparity, I think, between the two of them, what he was comfortable with and what she was. But I think when she made clear that this was just not acceptable, I think he found other ways to get support for the people that needed it. And that was the main problem.
Luther died in advance of Katie after they'd been married 21 years. What became of Katie after Luther's death?
Well, there was a problem in that women could not own property, literally own, you know, real estate. And the elector had given the Augustinian monastery to Martin and Katie. And by that time, I believe the elector was under arrest. And so he was not able to intercede on her behalf. And the person responsible then became the Saxon Chancellor, Gregory Brooke. And he did not like Catherine for some reason. And he was going to take away pretty much all of her properties and the Luther house. And so she had to go to Philip Melanchthon and a few friends and say, what am I going to do? This is all that I have. And furthermore, during the Schmalkaldic Wars, some of the farms that she managed were burnt and devastated, along with her buildings and stuff. So she suffered a lot of economic problems. I think she probably felt abandoned by the Wittenbergers. She had to leave several times from Wittenberg due to the imperial armies, because they would have arrested her and probably burned her at the stake. As I said before, you understood how the Catholics would have understood what they would have considered a fallen nun. In the last trip out of Wittenberg in 1552, the carriage she was driving ran out of control, and she took internal injuries and died of those injuries on December 20th, 1552, which is today's date. And that's why she is memorized on this date.
What would you say, with about a minute here, Marty, is Katie Luther's greatest legacy?
I think the most scholars would agree, and perhaps this is why they had the special displays in Wittenberg about Katie, is that she initiates with a good example of what it means to be a pastor's wife. The Christian Church hadn't had that for thousands of years, maybe at least 1,000 years, because the clergy had to be celibate, especially since the Cluny reforms. And the question then is, you know, so how does a woman who is married to a pastor, how does she relate to him? How does she relate to the congregation and the community? And Catherine did it with skill. And the thing is, being a pastor's wife does take a great degree of social skill, especially when you are uprooted with your husband and you've got to move to another town and you don't know a single person. These are brave women that are able to stand these type of things, and many women refuse to marry a pastor just because of those type of things that are involved. And she is the prototype of the Protestant clergy wife, and she set a good example for them all.
Dr. Martin Noland is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana. He's past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for inviting me.